there you go. There you go, breaking it down. Bringing it down. We're back.
We are back.
We're back. It was a long layoff.
It seems like it to us.
Yeah.
But not to the listener.
No, I mean, the listener probably listened to the other episode just before this one.
I would imagine. Imagine so.
And for that
so,
purpose,
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah, oh, yeah, happy birthday to you. Yeah. How are you feeling?
Feel all right.
Yeah.
Had a big lunch, so I'm kind of...
Yeah.
It's sitting with me now.
I got a lot of things rattling around.
It's just button heads in there, just like two...
Rams.
Yeah, they butt heads.
Yep.
That's what I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Got a lot of things ramming around in there.
It's crazy. I mean, you're it's weird on like a day-to-day basis. You don't think, hey, my whole body is like a
wonderland.
Well, I do think that.
Okay.
But that's just because I'm a big fan.
The roller coaster you installed in your stomach.
Right. Right. Exactly. Anatomy Park. No, but the... You just don't realize that so much stuff's going on, you know?
Yeah.
Stuff's being manufactured, stuff's being expelled, stuff's being...
There's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
That you don't get to see. You're not privy to all the time.
You're like the director. You get all the credit for the
failures
and successes. But all those little guys, you know, microorganisms and other things.
Yeah, yeah. Proteins. Lipids.
Your esophagus. Never gets credit.
You know, my esophagus is really doing the brunt of the work.
It does its job day in and day out, and you know, it never gets, it's like a key grip, doesn't get any respect.
Oh, no, nobody cares about the key grip.
Nobody can even tell you what a key grip is.
Well, it's the guy who holds onto the keys, obviously.
Well, I think that's a literal interpretation. I'm not sure if it's factually accurate, but...
Oh, well, I think we've said many times on this podcast before, factually accurate... is not a way to describe us.
Yes, it doesn't have any... Facts have nothing to do with this program.
No, also facts machines have nothing to do with this program.
That's true. Although there was that time when you had that failed fax machine business, when you were like, hey, I got a good deal on these fax machines from this this big
auction.
Auction, mm-hmm. Yeah. Beat out this red-haired woman for it.
Yeah.
And
that was a poorly planned move on my part.
It's true.
I did not realize that the time for faxes had passed.
Yeah.
Fax is in the past.
It's just one of a litany of failed ideas on your part. Let's name a few others.
Okay. Sponges shaped like foreheads.
Yeah, that one. I mean, I got where you're going with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was a lot of times when
I'm
trying to
absorb knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's not what I thought you were going for, but okay. I thought, you know, when you're cleaning your forehead, it's just like, why one movement with a forehead shaped sponge?
I see. Yeah. It's more efficient. I guess if that's the way that people ended up using it, that would be fine. But as it turned out, no one used it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of the ideas.
Mm-hmm. Is it like the races to tell you?
Well, here's what I was thinking with that cup.
Okay.
I was like, how do I get my coffee into my system more quickly?
Mm.
I put my mouth on the bottom of the cup.
Yeah.
And then I put the coffee in the top of the cup.
Yeah, sort of like a funnel.
Right. Well, and that day, my esophagus did yeoman's work, if I may.
You may.
It was very nice. It was quite a day. Spent 3 weeks in the hospital that day.
Yeah. Well,
as I reckon time.
Well, and it was actually more like three. Well, let's not get into that. But I would say that pouring hot coffee directly down your esophagus is not the best thing you could do for your esophagus.
Well, yeah. I thought the cup was going to mitigate that, but I guess not having a bottom really
can get you into trouble.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And speaking of bottoms, there was that time that I tried to perfect the assless cushion.
I don't remember that one. I must not have kickstarted that one.
Yeah, it was very small. I put it on Indiegogo. That's probably why no one saw it.
Yeah.
But basically, it was a cushion that just had a cutout for your ass. I thought, well, if you're going to sit down, wouldn't it be nicer to sit on air?
Hmm.
It wasn't.
Yeah, people get stuck in it?
A lot of people got stuck.
Okay. Did they accidentally confuse it for one of those things that you use in a public bathroom for to keep yourself between?
Oh, like
you
a sani seat sort of deal?
Yeah, that's what they call them. I always call them ass gaskets, but I guess that's
I think I like that better.
It's literally what it is.
Nice.
Not my own, folks. I don't know where that came from, but I'm not smart enough to have come up with that myself.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Someone far wiser than I, who had better schemes.
Well, yeah. Well, and I don't have good schemes, obviously. I'm blowing it.
Yeah. Well, they're a dime a dozen, though. So eventually, law of averages, you're going to land on one.
Yeah. I think what I have learned, though, from my just many, many failures, is that I'm a really good business manager.
Yeah.
Like, terrible ideas.
Sure.
Horrible ideas. But I think if you put an organization, say, in my hands, I could run that organization for you.
Yeah. Could do a little bit of that.
I could make some things happen.
Yeah. So you don't have to, if you don't have to come up with the ideas, if someone were to hand you good ideas,
sure,
you could manage those. You could manage the crap out of those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What do you need? You need this gang and that gang to get together? I can do that for you.
Exactly. It's good that you're learning from your mistakes, I think.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's I believe it was Einstein who said the definition of insanity is not learning from your mistakes and you know, kind of running around with a bag on your head and saying, you know, the end is near, and then jumping into a lake in the middle of winter.
Mm.
I think that's the full text of the quote. It never gets quoted that way, but
yeah, well, it's a paraphrase. I mean, that's not very quotable in its current form.
Yeah,
I was thinking you were going to go with Confucius. Confucius said, and this isn't a joke, our greatest glory is not in never fall. Well, what is it? Not in never failing, but in rising every time we fall.
Mm.
So that's quotable.
Oh, well.
Probably not what he actually said. He probably said something in Chinese.
I would imagine.
But
yeah,
it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, confused me. Get it?
It's weird that Confucius. His name was Confucius.
And he was supposed to enlighten
people. Is that where confused comes from?
I don't know.
Listeners, if you're hearing this, call in. Let us know.
Our number is 1-800-555-7237.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 1-800-555-7237. Yeah. I think I would be a good manager.
I think you would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, not of anything important, but.
Oh, no. Just like crime syndicates.
Yeah.
You know, like.
I mean, if television has taught me anything, it's that the leaders of crime syndicates are of two flavors. One, completely.
Jerry.
Well, the vanilla? Cherry vanilla.
Okay.
Cherry
all right. Cherry vanilla.
One being the uber mastermind who's so far ahead of you and everything that you know, he's got a plan that's like 16 steps away.
And by that, you mean he's like a super mastermind, not that he is a mastermind of the service Uber.
No, he uses Uber to transport drugs.
Oh, okay.
So
then
you unwittingly become a drug mule.
All right. That makes sense.
I don't know if you knew that, but take an Uber ride. You're immediately implicated in a crime.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good thing I don't have money.
Uber is German for goat, so there you go. It's not, though, actually. But or the other type of mastermind, and I use the word mastermind here in air quotes, which you can't see, but I'm doing. They're a mastermind in name only, in that they basically just find themselves the head of a crime syndicate almost by just sheer dumb luck.
Oh, sure. That's what I would be.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So no one's putting me in charge of anything on purpose.
Right.
But not that I wouldn't do a good job with it.
Sure. But you just find your way into it. You're just dumb luck. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm not sure where we're going with that, but crime syndicates.
Crime syndicates.
Yeah. Big part of this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. So we watched the new Netflix.
Netflix.
We watched the new Netflix show, Daredevil. Which
Daredevil
premiered on April 10th. So if you're listening to this on April 11th, that's way before we recorded it. That's amazing.
You went back in time.
Kudos.
Congratulations.
To you. Yeah.
I mean, the world's going to change now. Mm-hmm. And who knows how long this episode will last before it's erased because you've undoubtedly affected something in the time-space continuum.
There's a rift now.
A rift in time.
So we blame you. But if you're listening to this on the day it comes out or after,
right?
Well, then...
way to be normal.
It's pretty fresh still.
Still pretty fresh.
In the Netflix queues. I think if you're a real big fan of Marvel, you might have watched it all the way through already.
Yep.
If you're a real big fan of just the show, you might watch it all the way through. Did you watch it all the way through?
No, I did not.
I didn't either.
Yeah, I watched the first three episodes in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Then I watched another episode a day later.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to watch other things to prepare for our other episodes. Yeah,
that's what I found too.
It wasn't, but I did actively... I did stop myself and say, you know what? How long is it going to be before there's another season?
Yeah.
I'm just going to...
consume it more slowly.
Here's the thing, folks. You know, the two of us, we watch so much on our own on top of what we do for this show.
It's a lot.
I still have to finish the last season of Boardwalk Empire. I still got all the new Game of Thrones episodes coming out.
Yep.
I'm like a season and a half behind The Walking Dead. So, like, I'm pretty much culturally irrelevant at this point. With the exception of when I force myself to do Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is there's plenty of other things I can watch and delay the gratification of just, like, you know, my whole completion anxiety of having to go through and see every single episode.
Yep.
And so I'm going to, and we can get into this, but one of the things I think about this show in particular is it has its beats. It has some things it does every episode. It has kind of a certain arc to most episodes. And if you watch all of them in a row, and if you haven't already, listener, maybe if you have, you already know this, but if you haven't already, you can expect, you'll see those, you'll see the seams.
Yeah, you'll see it a little bit. And I think the other thing is that despite Netflix releasing every episode at the same time,
mm-hmm.
Episodic TV isn't really intended to be binge-watched.
Exactly.
And I think... that while it's an amazing ability that we have to do so, I think sometimes we hurt ourselves in the enjoyment of said television by doing so. So I applaud you for taking a slower tact with this.
And well, it's also because I really enjoy this show.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I don't want to tarnish that. I don't want to force myself through it, miss some of the nuances of some of the shows.
Yep.
Because I'm just like, okay, I've got enough time. I can watch three more episodes or something like that.
Right.
I also find that I just can't sit still for very long. So it's actually really hard for me to binge watch anything.
Oh, well, we are not the same in that regard.
I can sit still
for as long as you need.
I don't think I'm the same in that regard to most Americans.
Yeah. Because
it seems like most people, I have this weird...
it's because you have Canadian roots.
Well, I do. I have partially Canadian roots, but most of them are grown out, so it's fine. I just, you know,
they're all dyed red, white, and blue now.
I don't know. I was raised Catholic, much like Daredevil. I'm assuming he's Catholic, Irish Catholic.
Yeah. I mean, that's who he's speaking to, right?
Right.
His Catholic priest
doing
is kind of his. He checks in with him once in a while.
Mm-hmm. I think. Along with that comes this weird just like guilt about everything. Like,
sure.
And I know that that's a cliche about Catholicism.
Yeah, but
like,
there's a cliche for a reason.
I can tell you that, you know, having been raised in a Catholic household, having gone to school at a Catholic school for, you know, up through eighth grade, you feel guilty about every single thing.
Yeah.
That you
well,
do.
And I feel guilty for having sent you to those schools.
It's okay. I think my science education was lacking a little bit when I got to high school. But other than that, it was a pretty solid education.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have to try that hard in most of my high school classes because I had already covered a lot of the stuff in my more formative years. Not that high school is not formative. It certainly is. But I was able to focus my attention on other things like video games and
candy. The stuff that real high school is about.
Yep. Disappointment. And
there's a lot of that.
Yeah, awkwardness
just prepares you for the rest of your
life.
Yeah,
it does. It does. Yeah, I really learned how to disappoint women in high school. I think that was my crowning achievement in high school, and it's continued on through adulthood. So, if you're listening, ladies, I'm single.
So I watched 6 episodes, I believe.
Okay, how many eps we got in this?
Oh, So many.
How many? What would you say? What's the over under?
I'm gonna guess there's 13 because
lucky number.
That's what Netflix likes. Let's see what IMDb says. Yep, it says 13.
13 episodes.
13 episodes.
It's such a strange number. That must come from somewhere else. It must.
Well, it's a half a season order.
Okay.
So
a full season is 26 in traditional.
No, it's not. Full season is usually 22 to 24.
Okay. But 13 is a half
for
season.
For whatever reason, 13 is a half a season.
It's like a baker's dozen. They throw in extra for free.
Sure.
Like, hey.
Like the pilot.
What? Yeah.
Yeah.
Pilot, we recognize that thing was crap.
Yeah. So we'll give you 12 more chances.
Yeah. Although, we talked about this before in our pilot episodes, talking about pilot episodes for Amazon.
Yeah.
It's polished now. This is right. No pilot.
Oh, yeah. This
the
is
pilot
not a
actually
pilot.
Arguably this, here is one of the best episodes
yeah.
that I saw.
I will say there are a couple of moments in this where it diverges a little bit from what you think the pilot is trending toward.
Okay.
So let's break it down. Let's break down Daredevil first
okay.
of all. So Daredevil 2015. Whatever we're calling it.
I think that's appropriate.
Marvel 13-episode show from about the same character that Ben Affleck played before he was Batfleck
mm-hmm.
About 10, 12 years ago. So the guy was, as a child, he was in some sort of accident with presumably toxic waste
mm-hmm.
or radioactive waste of some sort. And so now all his senses are heightened, but mm-hmm. he can't see. He's become a lawyer, and so he's working out of Hell's Kitchen, which is his neighborhood where he grew up, to try and make the neighborhood a better place. Meanwhile, at night, he's gallivanting around as a vigilante.
Exactly. That's pretty accurate. I do want to talk a little bit, not right now, but about the powers in this particular
issue. Yeah, I think we have to, because I have some questions.
Sure. All right. Well, you know what? Let's get into it. What do you think?
Okay. So let me first talk about how I perceive Daredevil in my own mind.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
So in 1995,
mm-hmm.
Which is 20 years ago, if you're keeping track.
Checks
the,
out.
The Fox Kids had a great Spider-Man television show.
Okay, I
lasted
remember that vaguely.
4 to 5 years. They had like two episodes, like a two-episode arc that covered Daredevil and his origin. He came to team up with Spider-Man and Wilson Fisk, who is the main bad guy
mm-hmm.
in Daredevil. Was a huge part of that Spider-Man show.
Yes.
So I'm very familiar with Wilson Fisk, less familiar with Daredevil. However, as I understood it, he had this sort of, like, he pieced things together from his other senses.
Mm-hmm.
So he could feel, like, more vibrations in things than most people could. He could hear more than most people could. He had a heightened sense of smell. And is that, that's three of them. What's the fourth?
Touch
and
or no,
no feel
see hear
taste touch. He can probably taste stuff too. So from all of that information, he would build a picture in his mind. So mm-hmm. it wasn't actually a physical picture; it was just something that he saw in his mind, and it kind of gave him the lay of the land. And he was also, you know, just a super duper martial artist sort of type of guy. That's what I get mm-hmm. from his story. And maybe that's just from that show. I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
In this, the opening credits to me represent that sort of fog of war that he has to battle through all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's this cool, like drippy liquid stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's like it's forming around the thing that he's now like able to piece together in his mind from his senses,
from his other senses. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That yeah. doesn't seem to be the way that they're using it in the show.
No, not at all. I think in all the, you know, and I've only read a couple of the comics, but in all the incarnations of Daredevil, I think I might've actually seen the one you're talking about, the Spider-Man
yeah.
one. I did see the Ben Affleck movie. With,
yeah, you know, and I don't remember any of that.
I don't remember how they portrayed it, but I think that you could kind of, like, they did try to give you your perspective, like his perspective a little bit. And I think it was sort of like a bat sense or something almost.
Right, like a radar sort of thing. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, that's just a visual representation of what he's piecing together in his mind.
Exactly. I think in this one that, at least based on what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
The assumption is that he honed his skill being just this like latchkey kid who just basically was left alone like through most of his childhood. Cause there's a scene where he's actually sitting at like his table in his kitchen and his dad's off fighting mm-hmm. and he's hearing all these sounds. Right. And you're kind of seeing him just kind of sit there and like, so I think that they're taking a much more grounded approach to this to just say, he's just like the mentalist. He's just like way more perceptive and he's just done that through experience. It was like, cause there's nothing in the opening scene where he's blinded.
Right.
To suggest that it's any kind of special chemical. Maybe that will be revealed later.
Right. It's just some sort of acid sort of thing that burns out his eyes.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
But then there's a scene in like the third episode. I hope it's like the third episode. I don't remember exactly.
Okay.
So Rosario Dawson becomes a love interest for him.
Yes.
And she asks him, she's like, what does the world look like to you? And it's the only time in the episodes that I've watched that we actually get to see it. Mm-hmm. And he says, it's like a world on fire, right? And then it's like this weird red, like fiery thing. But he can very clearly see like her face.
Yeah.
You know, and the way in which the actor is portraying his blindness makes me think that they think as a show that Daredevil can physically see stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So it's like he's not traditionally blind, and it's not some kind of weird. Yeah,
it's like Geordi from Star Trek almost.
Okay, interesting. That, but to the world, he pretends to be blind,
right?
But for the most part, he can see. Right. He can actually see better than we can in a lot of ways. Right?
Yeah. So because if you watch forgive me because I don't know any blind people, and the only representations I have of them are probably from
media.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. I do, however, wear glasses, and when I don't wear glasses, like I can get a sense of like where my head is positioned differently mm-hmm. based on how I'm trying to see things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like when he's wearing the mask, his eyes are always focused on the thing that's most important, and he doesn't seem to be leading with his senses. He seems to be leading with his eyes, and that is the one criticism that I think I have of his performance.
The portrayal.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So that you mentioned the mask I think based on what I've read, because I haven't watched the whole show. For the majority of the show, he's not in a costume,
right?
Per se, he wears like an Under Armour shirt, and he has a mask over his face.
Yep,
the top half of his face, which makes him that much more terrifying, I think.
Yeah,
people.
I think so. He has no eyes.
There's no eye holes in it, but yet he's fighting like this. You know, he's fighting like a devil, like against these people. This is one thing where I have to say I was very disappointed in Netflix because, spoiler alert to people who haven't seen the show, the last. Apparently, like the last episode is the only time you get to see him in his outfit.
The costume.
Yeah. And Netflix decided to show it to me in the previews for the show.
Oh, okay.
Like when not the previews, but like you go on to your Roku,
the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cover image that they use. And it's like, what in the heck are they doing? I get it that they're trying to make it identifiable. Like, oh, mm-hmm. that's the Daredevil show. If you just saw like the character who plays Daredevil there. You know, with his glasses or something, it's like, oh, maybe it's not him. But come on, like that's huge.
I feel like they kind of blew it on that too.
Yeah.
Like because when I initially started watching, and I have an older Roku, so I don't know what it looks like in a newer one. But when I initially started watching, I had the image of him in the glasses, and then after 2 days. It switched over to the image of him in the suit. And I went, oh.
That's just irresponsible.
I guess that's what it looks like.
Because I'm the kind of person who I'm sure there's.
2 days is not long enough.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's been pictures of it online somewhere.
Yeah.
So people, if you really wanted to see what it looked like, you could Google it.
It's not a secret.
But you don't need to show it to everybody because that's part of the. Because there's mentions. Like he gets cut up a lot and stuff. And like, you know, Rosario Dawson's character even says you should wear body armor.
Yeah.
You know,
and he's like, I'm like, considering
it'll
it.
It'll slow something. Me down. Yeah. But I'm thinking about it or whatever. So, I don't know. But, yeah. So my two favorite things, just to like kind of button end this a little bit. I think we talked about this off podcast, but it's worth mentioning again. The opening penance that he's doing is amazing. Like, it sets this tone for the whole thing. We actually have a clip from it that I'm going to play.
Okay.
His eyes would go dead. And he'd start walking forward real slow. Hands at his sides like he wasn't afraid of anything. And the other guy, he'd see that look and he'd try and get away from him. My dad, he'd catch him and trap him in the corner. Let the devil out.
So in that, he's describing how his father used to occasionally win fights because his father was a boxer who basically made a career out of just being a punching bag.
Yeah.
Where he would occasionally do this, let the devil out. And like the way he delivers that line and everything, it just was like, wow, he just explained what's in him that turns him into Daredevil when he becomes Daredevil.
Yep. It's the thesis for his like dual personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that too. And I did say like I have one issue with his performance. This guy's amazing.
Yeah.
I think he's it's Charlie Cox. Is that his name?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. He does a great job as both Matt Murdock and Daredevil. Because mm-hmm. as we've discussed before, when you're playing a superhero, you have to
embody
both personalities. Mm-hmm. And I think he does a really great job. The rest of the cast, you might recognize Foggy Nelson. He was one of the Mighty Ducks.
Yep.
As a child,
he still kind of looks the same.
Yeah, he looks the same. And I have to say, so this show is billed as being incredibly dark.
Yeah,
I do not think it's incredibly dark.
It's incredibly dark for Marvel.
It's incredibly dark for Marvel, based on what we've seen previously.
Right,
and it is really, really violent.
Yes,
and the violence is incredibly visceral.
Yeah,
but the show itself is not that dark.
Yeah,
And one of the things that keeps it from being that dark is Foggy Nelson, who, for my money, is just a little bit too cartoony for
this show. Yeah, he's a goofy optimist. And yeah. I kind of expect him to... I expected him to be more cynical than he is.
Yeah.
And especially for a guy who goes by Foggy as an adult.
But, yeah. Well, and a guy who grew up in this Hell's Kitchen, who tried to get out.
Right.
You know, he was dragged back in by his friend Matt Murdock.
Yeah, I think... I actually have... So, we've talked about this with the pilots... The pilot really sets up Deborah Ann Woll as like a pretty likely romantic interest in Matt Murdock.
That was the thing I was going to mention as well.
But then, from then on, when she's working for them, all of a sudden Rosario Dawson shows up, and all of a sudden, like, whoa, okay, now there's the chemistry there. And now Deborah Ann Woll's character is just sort of like buddy buddy with Foggy. They're like, we're supposed to believe they're just like this happy go lucky buddy couple. And that somehow is going to translate into some weird love triangle between the three of them, which I just don't see as happening.
Well, you haven't gotten to the next episode.
Oh, okay.
Because in the next episode, they don't do a love triangle, at least for the episodes that I've seen. I know I'm only like two ahead of you. In the next episode, they kind of decide to engage in like a date.
Okay.
They're like, okay, her and Foggy. We're on this date.
I see.
You know, so they're sort of experimenting with that idea. I don't think they're going gangbusters into it like they are with Rosario Dawson and who is her character's name? Claire.
Claire. She's not an actual character in the comics. I think she's kind of like a couple of different characters mixed together.
You know what she is for me in this show, and maybe this is what they intended, is, and I'm really glad that they did this, In Arrow and in Flash, mm-hmm. which are the DC television properties that are out there right now, every single person on screen just about knows who Arrow and Flash are.
Yeah.
I think that Marvel like took a note from that and said, we don't want everyone to know who Matt is, but we do need one person to know so that yep. he has a confidant, so that confidant, so yep. that we can get exposition out of him.
Yeah. So I was reading a little bit about the characters, and I think that one of the characters she's based on is another character named Claire, who's like, then the story is not quite the same way, but apparently there's an arc of comics where she runs like a clinic for superheroes.
Oh, interesting.
Like that's her thing.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
She's like, Leslie Tompkins for Batman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be her purpose. And, you know, obviously she gets to witness some of the brutality firsthand, and you see her trying to make this decision between she's like a healer and also like the, you know,
yeah.
That
first do no harm.
Right, exactly. So that's really interesting. And I think that's actually that relationship, Daredevil's kind of just transformation, and then Fisk's portrayal is enough in this show for me to forgive the fact that I could care less about Foggy or
yeah.
Deborah Ann Woll's character.
I agree. And we haven't talked about Fisk at all, but yeah. Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yep.
Now, in the version of Fisk that I grew up with,
the Kingpin. Let's call him what it is.
Yeah, the Kingpin. He's the Kingpin.
They'll never call him that in the show.
No.
Just like they'll never refer to Matt Murdock as Daredevil.
Right.
Like, not to his face anyway, I guess.
But the version I grew up with is that he's this very wealthy man who is also very like sophisticated,
mm-hmm.
and they have those elements to D'Onofrio, but he doesn't have this sort of almost mid-Atlantic accent and this sort of like needs to surround himself with the trappings of sophistication. He's actually like pursuing some of it,
mm-hmm.
you know. He's like, I like art, but I don't know that much about it, so I'm
yep.
gonna. And his assistant is the one that has all this sophistication,
right?
Who, by the way, is one of my favorite characters in the show,
mm-hmm.
the assistant,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Wesley.
Yeah.
I think D'Onofrio is doing something completely different than we've seen from Kingpin before.
Yeah.
Certainly different than Michael Clarke Duncan.
Yes,
and
obviously.
I really like it.
Yeah, it's another product of let's make this character a human being and let's make him so in the comics he's actually like 400 or 500 pounds,
mm-hmm.
and he looks like a fat man, but he's supposedly like solid muscle. So he has this weird kind of supernatural ability as well. So I like that if they decided to go tone down for everything, they're gonna do that. And he's like, look, I haven't watched the whole show, but it's very clear to me that they're meant to be foils of each other.
Yes.
And they're meant to be like, they come from similar upbringings or have similar like trauma in their past or whatever. And you're supposed to see both sides of it. And
yep.
I've always enjoyed shows that do that. So yeah, he's just great. And actually he more than anything is getting me to want to go back and watch the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really curious as to what's going on with him and, with his budding romance with this art dealer.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. So, also like Ben Urich, the newspaper reporter, mm-hmm. like him, mm-hmm. You know, and as I said before, James Wesley, I guess is the character's name, the assistant.
Yeah.
I just think that guy is phenomenal, and I love that he's the number two.
Yeah.
Because it, like, the number one doesn't need that swagger.
Yeah. They always do that in, what is it? I wish, I'm blanking on what the other show is, where the guy, you know, the guy, they don't even say his name, right? That's like a thing. Like,
yeah,
you don't say
yeah,
his name.
Exactly.
He's never on screen,
mm-hmm.
and like you don't really see him until third or fourth episode. And he always has this guy who speaks for him who
yeah.
shows up, and everybody else is always mad that he's never there. And, like, that's a trope that's happening in like this type of stuff that seems to me to be more realistic.
Yep.
Like, if you were him, regardless of how polished he is or whatever.
Yeah,
like
you're never showing up.
Right, you're never gonna implicate. You're always gonna run someone else to do it because
yep.
you don't want. You can be seen with that guy, but you can't be seen in the same place as these other people.
Yep.
But at the same time, there's also, and this is something you get very early on with Wilson Fisk's character, is that I think the refinement is his way of keeping his rage in check. That he's just this angry guy.
Oh, fascinating. And so I think that's a great...
Right? I mean, it's what it is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to just try to control this. I mean, because you see him go crazy on this guy who embarrassed him.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's brutal, and it's a complete overreaction, probably, because he embarrassed him in front of the aforementioned art dealer.
Yep.
But that's maybe his way of trying to... You know, maybe cover up his past, or, you know, maybe he came from like unsophisticated roots. I would not be surprised if he grew up like right next door to Matt Murdock.
Well,
something.
He did say, he does, you know, say later, maybe in an episode that you haven't seen yet, his upbringing is he was born in Hell's Kitchen.
Okay.
Was taken out of it for a number of years.
Yeah.
Lived in the country,
yeah,
which he really enjoyed. But he came back to Hell's Kitchen to save it.
I see. Okay. So he's got, they both have savior complexes, yeah, in different ways, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah. And there's the last episode I watched, there's a really interesting conversation about that.
Well, it makes me want to go back and watch more. I'll have to check out the rest of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a lot of talk about, I mean, the show is packed with a lot of interesting things. So,
that's true.
And it's right up our alleys.
We might have to revisit it when the next season comes out. Well, maybe we don't usually do that, I guess.
But yeah, but it might be worth it. Recommended.
Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. And even if you're not a comic book fan, it's not as comic booky as other shows. So.
Nope. Oh, we didn't even talk about the best thing in the whole show. Mm-hmm. It's in the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
There is a fight scene. And if you've seen it, you know what we're talking about. And I don't need to say anything more.
Yep.
If you haven't seen it, I don't even care if you watch the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Watch this scene.
Talk about letting the devil out. That's when you have to watch.
Yeah. And it's not only interesting from that perspective, but it's also like master filmmaking.
Yeah, it's great. It's basically a one shot, or at least made to look like one shot.
Yep.
It might not have actually been one shot.
I mean, who knows what they can do with computers these days.
Right.
But
it's a great.
Yeah.
It's reminiscent of a few great action movies, actually. And I mentioned this to someone else, and they were like, oh, yeah, it reminds me of a particular scene from the movie Old Boy, which I know you've never seen, but is very similar in tone and style. And like, it's really cool. That was one of the things I liked best about Old Boy, actually, was that scene. So, so definitely check out Daredevil if you haven't already watched the whole thing and are like, yeah, we already saw it.
Yeah. It's on the Netflix.
Our other show is Bosch, and unfortunately not about the basketball player Chris Bosch, which someone brought to my attention yesterday, and would be a hilarious show.
It would be really interesting.
It's about
solving crimes.
Yeah, just a former Toronto Raptor, now Heat star, I think, playing a cop. Maybe he'll get a job as a private detective, and you know, he'll always catch the clues that are on top of cabinets and things like that in someone's house.
Right, well, he's a lot taller.
Exactly. Bosch is actually very similar in tone, to Daredevil. It's a crime show. It has a lot of the same tropes you'd expect from a crime show, but it actually does it in a way that's entertaining and feels new and feels truer to life, even though I know nothing about that situation.
Yeah, definitely gives you that more grounded appeal. And maybe it's because we've just seen all the other tropes so many times.
It's possible, yeah. I mean, it's got it all in there.
I mean, Vincent D'Onofrio made a career on that, right?
That's true, yeah.
I mean, that guy, hey, we're great actor, but... He was in a lot of procedural television.
That's true. That is absolutely true. I think the guy who Titus Welliver is the main character here, and I don't know. He portrays a cop that you've seen before. He's willing to bend the rules, but only in situations that seem like they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
He often does the right thing, mm-hmm. even when situations when you'd think like a crooked cop wouldn't, and he's certainly not a crooked cop. But I don't know. The actor's so good. I mean,
yeah, he's phenomenal. We were talking about this yesterday, just offhandedly, but I cannot figure out why it took so long for him to get a lead role.
Yeah. I don't know either. I mean, if you don't know,
I feel like we've seen him in everything.
Exactly. If you don't know who we're talking about, it's not because you should recognize his name. It's because you'll recognize his face. Like, he has been in so many things, mm-hmm. as these side characters, and done great jobs in all of those things as well. But in this one, he just really gets his chance to shine, and it's cool. And I actually, this one almost fell off my radar. I saw it when it first came out, you know, because Amazon and Netflix will now both, on any of your apps that you use, promote their shows. You'll see promos for it. And anytime I'd open Prime to watch one of our other shows, I would see it pop up, and I said, "Oh, that guy! I know that guy. I've seen him before." And I wanted to see the show. And then, you know, when I went to actually try to watch it this time, I couldn't find it. I had to search for it.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So it's like they've almost.
And this show decided. This show came out in February of 2015.
That's
so correct. It's not that old.
It's not, but by binge watching streaming standards, it's ancient, I guess. So
if you don't know this guy, just real briefly, I'm scrolling through his credits, and it's a million. He was in NYPD Blue for a few episodes. He was in Star Trek Voyager for two episodes. He was in 27 episodes of Deadwood, which I did not remember. And I love that show. He just everything that you can think of. Sons of Anarchy, The Good Wife. He's actually in a series of commercials, which I saw one today for some sort of like business thing where he's sort of like, "Hey, get your act together. We're the best around," or something like that.
Right.
You know,
he's kind of a
he's a straight talker.
It's for sure. He's paid his dues. Let's say that.
Yeah.
He when you see his credits, you go, OK, someone had to give him a show at some point just mm-hmm. because of this. And he takes it. And, you know, honestly, like this is it's a little too hard R for network television.
Definitely.
But this is a show you could easily see people being like, "Did you watch Bosch on HBO last night?" Like, you know, or AMC maybe.
Yep.
I think you know, when people say that Daredevil is gritty, this show is grittier.
Yes.
And it's grittier. I actually heard someone compare Daredevil to, like, you know, superhero show meets True Detective. It's not as gritty as True Detective.
No.
The intro, the picture you're talking about with the melting stuff, looks like it was made by the same person who made the True Detective opening.
I think it's like a melding of the True Detective opening and The Walking Dead.
Yeah. So I get where that comparison comes from. But this show, Bosch, has some really dark stuff in it. It's about murders, and it's about murders of vulnerable people. Mm-hmm. So it's kids getting murdered. It's prostitutes getting murders. And so it's kind of the people that are, you know, it's not like some rich white guy getting murdered. You know, it's people who,
they have had a hard, they haven't, they've just been dealt a bad hand already.
Right. I mean, in Bosch, they uncover the bones of a kid who's basically been dead for 20 years and, like, was never reported missing. And people just didn't, you know, didn't even know, you know, that he was gone. Bosch, you find out very early on, it has problems, you know, with people in his family in terms of he's actually had murder in his family.
Yeah. And presumably he's also had child abuse.
Exactly.
Well.
Yeah. So he takes a particular interest in these types of cases, and you have both someone who's killing prostitutes in this, who might have also been responsible for the kid being killed. It might have been the guy's first murder.
Yeah.
Well, way back in the day, you have that other element in there too of the serial killer mastermind guy playing tricks or like mind games with people, like, which is, you know, let's say it's pretty common at this point, but it's still done in a more convincingly, like, weird way.
You know what it is for me is it is this even-handedness.
Mm-hmm.
It is. What you see in like network television that would be doing the same stories,
mm-hmm.
is you would see a lot of overacting to really like push the emotion across on the screen to you. You would see a lot of overwriting to really heavy-handedly get the point across and explain everything to you.
Yep.
They do neither of those things here.
That's true.
In fact, I have a clip. Mm-hmm. And this one is so simultaneously as this whole thing is going on with both murders and the serial killer, Bosch is being investigated for shooting a perp that he was tracking down.
Right.
And he was alone at the time.
Right.
So he was cleared by the city, but he's in a civil suit right now with the
right.
with the guy's widow. And so he's on the stand, mm-hmm. and the prosecutor is examining him.
Your mother was a prostitute.
Yes.
Is your mother still living?
No.
How old were you when she died?
12.
How did she die?
She was murdered.
Was her murder ever solved?
No.
What happened to you after her murder?
I went into the system. Youth halls, foster homes.
So the killer was never caught, never punished?
No.
Detective, when you shot and killed Mr. Flores, weren't you, in effect, avenging your mother's death?
Objection.
You got a lot of fucking nerve.
I'm way ahead of you, Mr. Belk.
So, even in his blow-up, he was so even-handed there. And throughout the whole trial, anytime he's asked a question, he just answers it straightforwardly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. No. That was our assumption. That's how we felt about it.
Right.
You know, it's so like it's so measured, and he comes off the stand, and you'll see him like sort of in a hallway or outside or whatever, and he might like be going through some emotions and whatever, but he's so even-handed. It's exactly how you would imagine a cop being mm-hmm. on the stand mm-hmm. would be like, and I think that it's that measured tone throughout the whole thing that really makes it great.
So there's we're talking about cop tropes.
Yeah.
And this show hits so many of them.
Oh.
We could just sit there and list them all day.
We could.
But one of the, let's say the most common cop trope.
Yeah.
In my estimation, and I've watched a lot of cop shows.
Sure.
Is that the cop is so dedicated to his job and feels so strongly that he has to be out there to protect whatever, you know, make sure and keep people off the streets, whatever. That it always makes his life go to shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's always divorced, estranged from his kids, never manages to make it to his kids', you know, birthday parties, or his wife always accuses him of being like the fun dad who like the kids,
right.
You know, and the wife never understands, blah, 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 right? Common. This one does that too, but guess what? His wife's a former cop. She's a former FBI profiler.
Really?
Yeah. She's now a professional poker player.
That's amazing.
And on the one hand, she gets mad at him, right? Because he does all of those things. Doesn't help, you know, isn't there for his daughter. It's like basically his wife's remarried and they lived in another country for a long time. They actually live in Las Vegas. He lives in Los Angeles, you know, like that kind of thing. So he's close enough. He could visit her, but he doesn't. But like, she can't get mad at him for cop stuff because she was a cop. So like she kind of understands and he will, and it's a little bit of a cop out, but like when he's trying to cop out.
Oh, I see what you did.
Yeah. Nice.
Nice.
When he's trying to profile this guy, he keeps asking his wife to look at the files, you know, like, will you look at these? And she's like, no, I don't do that anymore. You know, but she's like, her curiosity gets the best of her. It's a really convenient thing, but that was like refreshing to me. It was like, oh god, great, another nagging wife who doesn't understand, but she actually does understand. She just got out,
you know?
She decided to get out, and he couldn't leave.
Whether or not you understand, it doesn't mean it's healthy,
right? Exactly. So
you're further ahead. You watched the whole series, right?
I did,
and I'm only a first few episodes in, so
yeah.
So that's new information. That's great.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
So how many did you see? You saw two, three?
Two. Yeah.
Okay. I watched all of them.
There's 10 of them.
There's how many eps?
10.
How many Omars?
Several.
Ah, okay. So the 10 episodes, I think, is very good for this show. It has a full arc. Everything comes to a conclusion. I do have to say that if this were an episode of CSI, it'd be 1 hour.
Yeah.
Like this entire case, there's two cases here technically and a couple little minor cases here and
might
there.
Be a two-parter.
It might be a two-parter, but for the most part, this is the thing where you'd see the crime in the beginning and it would be wrapped up at the end by CSI. This show actually has the respect to let you watch it. You know what I mean? To let you, and because of that, it allows for like, if you're going to throw a red herring into a CSI episode, it's going to happen in about Mark 40 minutes yeah. into the show. And you're going to know it's a red herring because that's the way every one of those episodes right. goes. This one
You can almost count, like, in a show like that, they will bring in X number of suspects. You can almost pick it out just by counting. Be like, okay, not the first one, not the third one. Definitely the second one.
Yeah. Or maybe though it's this, you think for the whole time it's the second one and then the fourth one will just show up out of yeah. nowhere or whatever.
Yeah.
This one, there are like probably 8 suspects, I think, through the course of the whole, you know, 10 episodes. And sometimes they're smart enough even as a show to let you come to a conclusion that someone's a suspect when they don't even say anything about it. So there'll be a character who something will happen. They'll have something weird about their past or they'll say something strange and it'll never be hinted at in the show that guy is a potential suspect. But if you're paying attention, you go, oh, it could be that guy. Like, you know, like some part of his story doesn't check out and they pointed that out, but they didn't say actively, what about this guy? And they go, oh, his story doesn't check out. You know, like they don't have to signpost it for you. So you actually, it lets you sit there. And again, this is a show I binge watch. Probably would have been better if I hadn't, where I'd have more time to think about this stuff. But a perfect example is the guy who finds the bones.
Yeah.
His dog finds the bones.
Herschel.
Herschel from Walking Dead.
Yeah.
No doubt it was his leg bone.
Very Herschel-y yeah. stuff.
It, well, that's just all he yeah. does. No doubt it was probably his leg bone that the zombie ate off.
Yeah, off exactly. It's the same prop.
Yeah. He has like weird knowledge of bones. His dog found it miraculously. They never think he's a suspect. They never say he's a suspect. But you always are kind of in the back of your head going like, well, this guy seems kind of interested in this situation.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but he keeps coming back. Like, they keep coming back to him at different points in the show.
He also seems to be an interesting sort of confidant for Bosch.
Yes.
They kind of set that up in the, like, second episode where Bosch seems to trust him.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And there's lots of little cool, interesting characters. There's this kind of hippie anthropologist guy that...
I love that guy.
Yeah. So he actually works at, like, the La Brea Tar Pits, and he knows stuff about blunt force traumas and, like, bones. So he keeps coming back to him and just, like, you know, like, asks him. That's another thing I like about this show, is that a good cop would not have all the answers, but would, like, know who to go to yeah. for the answers. And he's not afraid to go to his wife, to go to the old man Herschel,
yep.
to go to, you know... Like, for Herschel, he's an older guy, so you know he's lived in the neighborhood for a long time. So he can go to him and say, hey, do you remember, like, some of the families used to be around here in the 90s? Like, you know, where would I contact them? He goes to the bone guy and says, are you sure this was a trauma? Did he fall and hit his head? Like, right. could it be, you know, like, I love that. And that also...
That's police work, right?
Right, exactly. That's what a detective would do. A detective would go, well, I don't know anything about this, but I know someone who does,
yeah.
or I'll find someone who does.
Yeah.
And that just... I think that these are based on some novels, and I think that probably the person who wrote the novels is pretty informed about this stuff, or at least has the, and I keep saying this, but I really mean it, like the respect
yeah,
for the audience.
I think that's true. One of my favorite things is, full disclosure, I have watched a lot of Castle.
Okay.
My wife loves the show.
The Nathan Fillion show.
Yeah, the Nathan Fillion
show.
He's like a
writer, but he goes along as a police detective.
Yeah, so basically the short premise of the show is that the woman in the show is her name is Kate in the show. She
Kate
is
Castle.
Like
okay.
Kate Beckett.
Okay.
He's Castle.
Oh.
She is his muse. He makes stories about her basically, but like renames the character. So he tags along on her adventures or her stuff. Eventually they're basically partners. Now they're married in the show. It's a whole thing. The show is a procedural.
Yeah.
The thing that is appealing about it is that Nathan Fillion is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the show is fun because of that. And there are some other characters that are also kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing new here. What they do in the show that drives me nuts, though, is really like jam the evidence and jam their thought processes down your throat.
Yep.
One of the things that they do in any cop show is have to explain to you some things.
Yes.
What they've done in this show, for example, is when they find the bone, they discover that it is from a child who has probably suffered some child abuse.
Right.
They talk to the hippie coroner who describes this. It's Bosch and his partner. Mm-hmm. Bosch knows everything the coroner is saying because he has experienced some of it, or yes. That's the sense we get. Mm-hmm. He says to the coroner, "I know what this means, but explain it so that my partner knows it."
Right.
That's only for us.
Yeah.
That's totally. Only for us. I think that's brilliant.
Totally. Yeah. I that's a great, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that. I forgot about that, but that I remember that moment where I was like, yeah. Yeah, that's yep. So a long time ago I read this book called Everything Bad Is Good for You.
Okay.
It was by an author, his name is Steven Johnson, and he's since written a few things, but he talks about in this book it's quite a few years old now at this point. But he was talking about the evolution of television and narrative, and he was saying that audiences have either gotten smarter and or showrunners have decided to give them more credit as time has gone on. So I think that this also applies to, there's a spectrum of it within network to streaming to, you know, pay for
higher
cable
drama,
shows,
whatever.
Yeah. What do you want to call it? Yeah. Prestige drama, I think, sometimes the word gets thrown around. Is that when you're doing a show, a general show for like the general audience, you have to cater to the lowest common denominator. So like that person who's annoying, who sits there and watches a show with you and has to ask you 100 questions about it. That's who they're trying
to write.
Yeah. They want to make sure that most everybody can understand. Where it loses a lot of people is if you can figure that stuff out on your own, it gets really annoying because it's a lot of exposition. And I think he called it, I used this term earlier, but I think he called it signposting.
Yep.
That like a show back at like a General Hospital back in like the, you know, 70s. I don't even know if it was on back then, but a show like that.
I think it was.
If you had a story wherein a man comes in the beginning needing a kidney transplant, and then later a patient comes in who's about to die and is an organ donor, right? In that show, there would be someone in the ER when that guy's dying going, "Oh, we can give the kidney to the guy who came in earlier," right? Like having to tell people this is the connection, whereas shows now would let you make that connection on your own. But I still think that a show on CBS would do more of this than a show
way more.
On, yeah.
Way more.
And that's where I get lost on a lot of it. That and also it's formulaic, and I recognize that formulas are there for a reason. They work. And they're comforting. They're comforting. They'll let people know what to expect. So, Anyway, it's a great show.
It,
you won't be disappointed if you watch the rest of the first season.
And the only thing I want to, the last thing I want to say about this is if you like old noir, there are some things about that appear in this show. A lot of it having to do with the fact that it's in in L.A. Where a lot of noir takes place, it's got that sort of exhausted feel to it. Mm-hmm. He's a former soldier, just like a lot of the noir, you know,
former special forces.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just like a lot of the all that noir stuff came out of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like these private dicks. As they were former soldiers, mm-hmm. who were just trying not only to help out, but also cope with whatever was going on in their lives. And that's certainly his character profile in this too. So if you like that stuff, this is also for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Really quickly.
Yeah.
Top five cop tropes.
Cop tropes. Well, we already mentioned the misunderstanding
one
wife, loose cannon.
Two. I think yep.
He's a loose cannon, doesn't play by the rules. Let's see. I had a bunch of these the other day. Turn in your badge so you gotta put the gun and the badge on the thing. What else? Opposite partner.
Yep.
So the partner's from a different background, different whatever.
He's seen it a million times.
What's the next one? My favorite one.
Yes.
I don't know if this is a top five. My favorite one is that he always goes back to the crime scene and finds something that no one saw before.
The
CSI. Yeah. So that would be my top five, I think.
That's good. I like that list. That's That's where, even if it's not the like order top five, that's the top five that come to mind, and they're all applicable.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And obviously, the getting charged for or getting investigated for shooting. He shot like five people in this show. Like they basically they ask him like how many people have you shot, and you know he or how many people have you killed, and he rightly says, "Well, I was a soldier, so I you know I don't know how many people I've killed."
Right.
But they say, oh, "Okay, as a police officer," and he's like four or something like that.
Yeah, he's got a very specific number in mind.
And, yeah. Justified, which is also a great show if you've never seen it.
I have not.
If you like Deadwood, you should like Justified.
I know. I love Timothy Olyphant.
And there's some great character actors in there too as sort of side characters.
Margot Martindale
is a big part of season two, I think season two or three. She's like the main kind of kingpin of this like meth dealer ring.
Nice
in that season, but it also centers around a character who like the beginning of the show is him shooting another person, which is exactly what Bosch is. Whereas he just gets like reassigned. He doesn't like he gets cleared of the murder, mm-hmm. like under dubious circumstances, and he just gets like relocated to a place he doesn't want to be. Which and now reminds me I have to watch the rest of Justified. There's another show I have to catch up on. Yeah. So you know, let us know what you think, guys. If you like these shows, you don't like these shows, seen too many of them. I know there are certainly lots of detective and cop shows out there.
Yeah.
But they keep making them for a reason.
Yeah. I mean, they're interesting, right?
They are.
So we recommended Daredevil.
Yep.
If you had to pick one between Daredevil and Bosch.
Oof. It's tough because I haven't watched all of Daredevil. I will say that I watched Daredevil for like four episodes. Then I watched Bosch, and then I continued to watch Bosch until I was done.
Yeah, yeah.
So if by my own viewing habits I had to vote, I'd have to say Bosch.
I think I'd pick Bosch, too.
Yeah. It but nothing, it is
not taking anything away from Daredevil.
Sure.
It's just that good.
Yeah, and Daredevil has a chance for more in the future, but I just, you know, haven't seen it yet. So I'll update later when I've seen both all the way through, but it kept my interest a lot more because it is a big mystery. It's two big mysteries that are kind of intertwined.
Yeah.
So
all right. Well, Ed, one of the things that I like, is a good basketball game.
Yeah, I like basketball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I really love though mm-hmm. is when they shoot it, and it just makes the swish sound.
Nothing but net.
Net.
They used to say
precisely
the net.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you like the net,
mm-hmm. with Sandra Bullock.
Well. Or a basketball net.
Or without. Okay, the net. Yeah, got it. All right.
It's a metaphor I'm going for here.
All right, the net. If you like the net.
If you like the net, mm-hmm. you can swish on over to PrimeFlixPod.com.
Where would you find there, Dean?
At PrimeFlixPod.com, you can find a multitude of other episodes.
Mm-hmm.
We also occasionally will, if we know ahead of time, we will post what's coming soon in the next episode.
Yeah.
If you have any interest in telling us anything about the show, whether mm-hmm. you want to leave a review of a movie or a television show that you've seen, or you want to leave a review of what we're doing, or you want to tell us that we suck, you know, you can do that there. We have even like a little audio thing.
Really?
Yeah, you can click that button.
What if I wanted to contact you via some other form, like something else? Like, what if I was like on Twitter?
Well, if you like have a carrier pigeon,
uh-huh.
you can put a message in its little beak,
mm-hmm.
and address that message to @PrimeFlix on Twitter, and that'll get to us.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, but what if I didn't have Twitter? What if I was like my parents and have only just discovered Facebook?
Oh, we are on the Facebook.
We are.
We are on the Facebook. You can just search for us, uh-huh. Prime Flix, and our little thing will come up, and you can go, oh, I like you.
Yeah, so if I were to like it, then I would probably see like updates and you know episodes, trailers, all that stuff you're talking about right in my Facebook feed.
It would come directly to your feed, as I understand it.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, I'm checking Facebook at least once a day. You know, I'm probably not coming to PrimeFlixPod every day. So if I liked it, then I could still keep up with what's going on.
Then you can get the freshest content.
Ah, interesting.
The flixiest content.
Okay, you mentioned a review. What if I left a review? What would that do?
Oh, that would just boost our ratings.
Oh, okay.
Or our rankings, rather. Probably our ratings, because likely you're going to review it positively. Although, if you don't, that's fine. That's up to you.
Of course.
But if you leave us a review, for example, on iTunes, that will just work into the iTunes algorithm and get more people to kind of see the show.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's great.
Yeah.
I just have one other question.
I have an answer.
Can I hear that music again?
Oh, man. I thought you'd never ask.
I've been Ed.
And I'm always Dean.
And we will see you on the internet.